Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 102 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emelson, and joining me, we have my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And today, we are going to be talking about the patch. It came out on Tuesday. We've got the new world zone. We've got some hot fixes. We've got some just like general news. Like there was an interview with Ian Hazzikostas. There's some new service stuff if you are transferring lots of characters like I have been. So just lots of stuff. But before we get into the like 9.2 stuff, let's do some of the news.
A little bit
enough with a real spicy one, I think.
Yeah, so there was a ban wave basically last week, last Tuesday. A bunch of people or a bunch of bans went out, 30-day bans, actually. It's interesting. The note that went out, if you got one of these, said for real money transfer, real money trading. However, the actual reasoning was account sharing. And basically, it looks like a lot of these people that were banned essentially may have been boosted through Mage Tower specifically and other sort of like boosts, whether that's like, you know, potentially Mythic Plus for the titles since those are in now, or, you know, the old PvP piloting too. But
and this is specifically like piloting, right?
Exactly.
It's if you buy a boost to get your 20s done and you AFK at the start of the key or whatever, like that's still allowed. It's when somebody else logs on your character and plays it for you that these boosts are for, which like the Mage Tower is a really, really common culprit. There was a Reddit thread where I just saw tons of people being like, yeah, I had someone play my character to get the Fail Bear skin because I wanted that, but I didn't know how to play Bear.
Exactly.
I actually really like that Blizzard did this because it kind of preserves the like prestige of those Mage Tower skins.
100%.
And it's not like the Fail Bear is like impossibly hard, right? I would say getting that done is significantly easier than doing a like, you know, cutting edge raid boss or getting your 20s done. It's just going to take practice and learning how to play Bear. And if you can do that, then you can finish the Mage Tower.
Right. Yeah. And I think the other thing too, that I don't think I put this in the news, but there was a separate post and a couple of people asked the question. Blizzard is actually going back and removing the rewards for anybody that did get piloted. So they're not only just banning you, but they're also going to clean up, you know, the rewards you may have gotten from some of this stuff. Yeah.
Wow. I had not seen that.
It was either a day later, or, you know, a couple of days after the ban wave went out, they clarified that piece. So, So, I mean, good on Blizzard for finding folks that got piloted. I mean, like, to be fair, like, you put in the time, you can probably get this done, right? If you needed to. And
Only thing, and honestly, this feels to me like it's somewhat self-inflicted because of the timer on Mage Tower.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if Mage Tower came out and they were out for, like, 2 months, right? Or were out for all of, you know, 9.2. Mm-hmm. Then, well, like obviously there are still going to be some people that get pilots. It's just some people are going to do it.
Right.
But there's a lot of people that then don't have the pressure to like, I have to get this done in the next 2 weeks. So I don't have time to learn to do that. I can't get that done myself. I'm going to go get someone to pilot it for me. You can then, you have more time. There's less pressure. You know, you can take the time, like a weekend here, a weekend there, and work on it instead of like 2 weeks. That's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's, I think the other side of it too is you'd probably see, maybe not as much, but you'd definitely still see piloting even if the Mage Tower was active 100%. Like 24/7, right? So, I can definitely see that aspect of it. But I mean, good on Blizzard for going back, checking the stuff, you know, getting rid of the folks that are doing it. So,
yeah. Blizzard has historically been kind of bad about going back and removing rewards that people got for exploiting. And so I'm a little bit surprised to see them going back and removing the Fail Bear skins, but I am at the same time like good on them.
For cleaning up. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So the next piece of like non-patch news was Ian and lead level designer Shoot was their name. senior level designer, sorry, Sarah Wands, gave an interview to GamesBeat and went through a couple of different topics, right? So Wowhead's got a post up and sort of a highlight of it. But the interview itself is actually pretty interesting, going through sort of what their, some of their design philosophy changes that we're seeing from Blizzard, right? A lot of times, like, so the interesting thing is, I think they're finally coming around to the idea that, like, putting any sort of power increase, regardless of how big or small it is, on, like, mindless content is not a good thing, right? So, like, don't put power behind a rep grind, because even though, even if it's a 0.5% increase, there is always going to be the expectation across the general population that you have to do it, right? And, you know, I think that's just the nature of the way games are nowadays, is, like, there's always the I think Ian even mentions this, there's always the meta, right? There's always, yeah, like following metagaming, like following, hey, game comes out, there's a tier list, I think even says, and we've talked about tier lists before too, where it's like, I hate writing them, but also in any game I play that isn't WoW, I go and look up a tier list for what's the best, right? Like, I think in general, yeah, that's just the way games are played nowadays. So yeah, so it's a, that's sort of one part of the interview, but they cover everything. So, like, design goals about putting, you know, less power in some of the new zones and doing more, like, cosmetic, yeah, things, and you know,
it's more a for great people. Interview overall. Yeah.
There's not really much about, like, new 9.2 stuff or even new 10.0 stuff, right? But just in terms, yeah, of, like, understanding a little bit of the philosophy change behind Blizzard, or behind the WoW team in general. So it's interesting. Well,
I do think it's funny that Ian comes out and says, I think Anduin could have been an end boss in most other raid zones. And it's like, it's almost alluding to the fact that people suspect that he was supposed to be the end boss for 9.2. And the Jailer was supposed to be for 9.3. The 9.3 that's, of course, not happening.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
But if you read the, I don't know if they put this in the Wowhead stuff, but in the full interview, they asked that question about, was there going to be a 9.3? And Ian flat-out's, yeah, like, no, like, it was always supposed to be a three-parter, you know? And so you, I don't know if you kind of read between the lines, but it sounds like they're sort of heavy on the, like, yep, we always plan this to be 9.2, which I still don't believe him.
They could technically not be lying if they went in without any plan at all.
That is true.
And therefore, by the time they had a plan, the plan was for 9.2 to be the final patch. If exactly. you don't plan, you're not lying.
That is fair.
technically not lying.
That is true.
I do think it's interesting. So, like, looking at Ian's response to the stuff about min-maxing and kind of the meta and tier lists, mm-hmm. I do think he kind of misses the fact that it's not. So he commented that, like, they saw a much broader range of players see that 0.4% power increase and view it as mandatory. But the fact of the matter is, it wasn't a 0.4% power increase in Corthia, at least, because of how your conduits and your sockets were tied behind the same thing. So for a lot of people, just the sockets were probably a 4-5% power increase, because a socket by itself, you get 6 of them, right? And it's like, for a lot of people, a socket is anywhere from 0.5% by itself, like a single one, to close to 1% power gain. And I mean, obviously there are exceptions. I didn't do Corthia initially because their sockets are not good. Like, they're not bad, but they're not negative, but they're not a huge positive for Brewmaster.
Exactly.
I just didn't do it. But for a lot of people, like, in total, doing Corthia was somewhere between 5-10% power gain, just between getting all of your max rank conduits, getting all of your sockets. And that's why people viewed it as mandatory. If it were actually like 0.5% power gain for most people, I think we actually would have seen most people go, that is not worth my time.
Yeah.
But because of how big the aggregate power gain was from getting all of the sockets and all of the conduits from Corthia, and same with the Maw, it definitely is.
It was much larger.
It was much larger. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that he misses in this discussion about stuff like Corthia.
Right. And I think they do acknowledge, even though he gets like the percentage power wrong, right? Like, think he did. They do now realize that, like, even for a cat, like, we'll say casual or a player that isn't like rating mythic, right, there's still that sort of mandatory, like, help the group out type mentality, even at those type of guilds. So
yeah,
I think it's a much broader nowadays, like, mentality, just playing a game where, like, even if you're not, like, the players who are not going to care about it are always not going to care about it. And it's the people in the middle that were on the fence about either doing it or not doing it that now are just going to be pushed into doing it. Right. Yes, and so, like, the, absolutely, like, that's sort of, I think, the mentality shift. So,
yeah.
But yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like, particularly with Zerith Mortis, right?
Yeah.
They've definitely taken that into consideration, sort of removed really any power from the zone, rather, other than, like, in zone stuff. So,
yeah. It is. So I was speculating last week that the reason, you know, we didn't see socket items in Zerith Mortis is because they might be intentionally removing all of the power gains from the reputation. And it does sound like that is the case.
Yeah.
Like, you do your world quests in what is soon to be a weekly. We'll get to that in a minute. In Zerith Mortis, you get your revered reputation, you know, 3-4 weeks into the patch. And that's it. You get your Unity upgrade. You don't have to do anything more. I'm actually, like, I don't think this is on the discussion for today, but I do think it is a very big deal that the conduits in Mythic Plus are going to drop at a higher eye level relative to Mythic than they did in previous patches.
Yeah.
Because previously you would be getting, like, a 20, 30 eye level upgrade on your conduits from doing Corthia. Now, the difference between getting the conduits from the, like, plus getting all your 20s done and just doing a key is just, you know, one tier. It's much smaller.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be nice. Yeah. So, yeah. So from that perspective, it seems like, you know, power sort of centralized in, like, a few key progression based activities, like raiding, Mythic Plus, PvP, right? The other thing that Ian touched on too was, like, the idea of borrowed power in the interview, which I think was an interesting couple of points, right? And the idea that, I mean, borrowed power is sort of, I think, a buzzword that we use a lot in the community just around, like, systems that we know are going away, right? Like, the original artifact weapon is one of the earliest examples of, like, borrowed power coming front and center in the conversation. But there's always been some level of expansion sort of wide system that just goes away at the end. Azurite armor was last expansion, this expansion, you know, now it's everything. It's like Stomp sockets were part of it, you know what I mean? Like the Covenant abilities are going to be sort of lumped into this. But he touches on it a little bit. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't.
No, I think the only thing I was going to say was just, like, the interesting thing is, like, from a design point of view, they started it with Legion and basically said, like, we're going to design this system that's wildly powerful that we know is going away. So as a design team, let your imagination go wild because we don't have to support this beyond this expansion, right? Which from a design perspective makes sense. Like, it's an interesting way of saying, for this expansion, we have this crazy new thing that we're not going to have to worry about balancing later because we know we're going to take it out. I think the first time it's cool. Right, like, artifact weapons are cool. The unfun part is now that we're three expansions in and we are still getting the same, like, now you go into an expansion and realize my class is, like, number one, my class is probably going to wildly change at the end of expansion, which, cool, not cool, depending on how you view it. But the other point is, like, this cool thing I have right now has a lifespan, right? Like, has a end date of when that new expansion is sort of done. And if I really like it, that sucks, right? Because I know I'm going to lose it versus, you know, just building cool things as a part of a class, and they may still remove them, right? But there's not this sort of timer on them, which I think is the one thing they've gotten wrong, I think, by reusing that same idea.
I do think the whole, like, the transparentness with which covenants were borrowed power really undermines one of their stated design goals, which was to have this be, like, this big permanent decision that you made for your character. When we know the system itself is not permanent, like, covenants even initially didn't work outside of Shadowlands zones. So it was very clearly, like, this is supposed to be a temporary thing. It really undercuts that goal that they had of it being this big permanent decision that you made for your character. So, you know, that there's other knock-on effects that meet that, like, the way that we have grown accustomed to borrowed power systems and kind of the pessimistic look that we have for them now has negatively impacted how new systems are received.
Exactly.
And then, of course, there's things like, I don't think Azerite power in general had the cool factor that artifact weapons
had. Oh, no. Yeah.
Covenants get a lot closer because there are some really cool abilities, like Spear of Bastion for warriors. The Night Fae, Feyline Stomp for monks is really cool. Mm-hmm. Invoke the Spirits or Convoke the Spirits is like awesome. You know, there's a number of these abilities that are just really cool that, you know, do have that cool factor back in the way that the Azerite power did not. Uh-huh. But it still is like the fact that it's borrowed power, like, really points in the well of it being like a permanent decision, because we know we're not going to be Night Fae monks or Necrolord or Kyrian monks next expansion. We're just going to be monks again.
Exactly. Yeah, and then there's the expectation that we'll get the next system, right? Like the next system just like built on top of it, right?
So
it's just one of those things where it's just like, oh, it's knowing up front that this is going away, I think, hurts any of the new stuff. And that's sort of the problem with borrowed power nowadays. Like, I feel it's less of an issue where, like, if your quote unquote class is propped up like by borrowed power, because it's technically not, like, it's just,
yeah,
it's your class for that expansion. It's how it plays.
Won't change much going into next expansion, yeah, because the classes, the spec is not propped up by borrowed power in any meaningful way. Like, we've got some good abilities, but the spec itself is just good on its own.
So that's sort of the idea too, is that, like, from a Mistweaver perspective, like, to be fair, like, our covenants add a little bit of power but not much, and so they don't really change the way you play.
You've got Venthyr, that's a lot of power.
Well, we'll talk about that. But yeah, so I mean, that's the borrowed power. It's an interesting way where they started it. The interview in general, while there's not much about like what's coming, cool new stuff that's there, however, the idea, like being able to peel back the onion a little bit, see some of like their design process, right? At least in Ian's words, is interesting. So
I do think, so here's a hypothetical question. If we had gone into Shadowlands and Covenant abilities had just been a talent row, but Soulbinds had been tied to the Covenant that you picked, do you think that would be different? Like, if they had said these Covenant abilities, this is a talent row that's going to stick around after this expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Soulbinds are just the borrowed power.
It would have been interesting. I think it would have been, I mean, it would have been different. I don't know if it would have changed much in terms of the way like I viewed them. But it would have been something where we probably would have been, to be fair, we would probably been able to test it a lot better, test all four of them a lot better than like, you know, I'll say the one nice part about doing it that way, if it was just a talent row and you could freely swap, you know, at least between the major abilities, maybe the Soulbinds, right, like you said, are locked in. That would have made like maybe it a little bit easier to swallow if one covenant was so much better than another covenant. I guess from a story, like, it would be tough from a story perspective to bring the power forward, right? Like, unless that's where it loses me, is because while it's an MMO and like I generally don't care about the story, I still like to see threads of things being like connected, right? Like, if we would have still had our artifact weapons two expansions later, that would have been weird, right? Because of the way the story wrapped up in Legion. So I think it would have been different in expansion, the way that we sort of viewed covenants, if it was just a talent row you could freely swap whenever you wanted. Post the expansion, I think it would have just, the story would have had to make sense as to why we get to keep them, for me, at least personally.
All right, one more piece of non-patch news before we get into the patch itself.
Yep, this is important for you.
We have character transfer bundles, as well as right now a sale on the character transfer service. So previously it was $25 per character transfer, just period. No matter how many you transferred, it was just $25 each. So if you wanted to transfer four characters, you're looking at $100. They now have bundles, like, right now it's actually 8 for $80, which is significantly cheaper. And once the sale ends, it'll be $6 or $80. This is like really huge for people that are looking at doing server transfers to get off of realms that are just dead. Yep. They are also, so if you bought a transfer shortly before this announcement and you contact support, they've been giving out game time as like, they're like, we can't refund this. We can't like give you the bundle price or anything like that, but we can give you game time. And so they've been doing something like, I had three characters. They gave me 45 game time. So it's like pretty good. And I think most of the people in my guild have gotten game time. And this is something like, I spent $75. I would have totally, if I had known this was coming,
yeah,
I would have waited and spent an extra $5 and gotten the six characters for $80 instead of the, you know, three characters for $75 that I did. But this is still like, this has been a long time coming. It's very necessary in the day and age we're in now, where we do have people, like we don't generally, my guild has not historically had people apply and then say, you know, I'm not actually interested because of the realm you're on. But there are people that I talk to that are like, I'm not transferring to anything that's not named Illidan, Area 52, or like Thrall or Mal'Ganis, like any of the big five.
Yeah.
They won't even consider it. And then we also do have people who are like, this is going to be really annoying. I'm going to transfer my main, but I have 17 other characters on whatever old realm I was on. So yeah. I can't transfer all of them.
Yeah, I mean, even for us on Mal'Ganis, like we'll get folks that come over and they'll just bring their main because they have, you know, four or five other characters on whatever server they're coming from that they can still leave them there. They're still hordes, so if we need to do stuff, we cross realm it, but their main at least sits in the guild, right?
Yeah.
The only other thing is like then typically if they want to play an alt right in the main raid, then they'll slowly bring those over like one at a time, but it wouldn't be like transfer six characters, come with them, it'd be like one and then slowly move the others. So
The other thing that comes with this change is that previously when you bought a character transfer, it was just applied immediately. You couldn't like bank them for later. You couldn't spend VNet balance on the character transfer during a sale and then use that transfer later. It had to be used right away.
Right.
Now they function more like level boosts. You basically get, when you buy this like bundle with eight character transfers or six character transfers, you basically get six character transfer tokens, you know, where your level boost tokens show up in the like top right or top left of your character selection screen that you can then apply to characters to transfer them. So this is something where if you're like, I need to transfer, you know, five characters, but the bundle is six, you can buy the bundle for six and then save the sixth one for later.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's nice. That makes it a little bit easier. I see. I might actually just buy character transfers just to have them, like just in case, right?
Yeah, I'm like 99% sure that is the way it works. So if I got it wrong, I don't know.
Whatever. Oh, well, it'll be okay.
And now Emelson's killed. Hey guys, sorry, I'm transferring to Area 52 because Emelson told me that you could get the bundle and it would just stick around.
It's like now I have to actually transfer characters. Cool. I guess. And then real quick, just a quick aside on a personal note, how's the transfer going? How's the whole guild all moved over? Ready to go?
Yeah, we have one person that was waiting until the season ends to make sure that they got their Mythic Plus title.
Gotcha.
Just because transfers, like obviously they're region wide, but the transferring right before titles go out has historically been a great way to not get your title. Yep. And so they've been hanging out on the old realm waiting for their title, and then they're going to transfer before raid next week.
Oh, nice.
But everybody else is transferred over. And it's honestly really noticeable how much more like sales volume there is on the auction house. I had given up selling stuff on the Trillion auction house, to be totally honest. Like if I didn't need something, I was throwing it in the guild bank in hopes somebody else could use it.
Right.
Because throwing it on the auction house, just like if stuff was selling, it was selling to people in our guild, basically. Yeah, or to one of the other big raiding guilds on the server. That was it. If it wasn't useful for raiding, it just wasn't selling at all. Gotcha. And Area 52, you can put like pretty much anything that has some value up for sale and it will sell. So yeah, it's been very noticeable already. There was a little bit of lag just in general on patch day, but by the time I got on at like 6 PM, it was gone.
That's good. Yeah, that's going to just be a thing now with like any of the big servers. Like the patch days are always hit or miss. So yeah, for your weekend or your weekday team, it'll be interesting to see if you guys continue to try and keep Tuesdays in the calendar.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what their Tuesdays like this coming week when the raid releases.
Yeah.
But for my team on the weekends, like Friday is going to be fine. There's basically no way that like Friday evening is going to be a problem period for raiding.
Maybe.
Especially as late as we start, because we're starting at 8. We're like starting a bit after prime time, which is like 6-7 is like people get off of work, they get home, they log on. That's prime time.
That's true.
Is like the end of prime time. It's like if you leave and you're still kind of like catching the end of rush hour, that's our raid start.
Gotcha. Not too bad. Well, awesome. I'm glad that part of it's going well. All set up on the new server, hanging out. So, well, cool. Well, I guess let's transition and do our sort of, this is sort of our patch section of the thing. So this sort of spread out across a bunch of different topics. So we'll first talk about like just the patch in general, our first thoughts, all that fun stuff. There were a couple of hot fixes that are coming in, so we'll save those maybe towards the end or intertwine them. This is really a little bit of a free flowing thing. To go through. So I guess, you know, if you want to kick it off, I guess how has the patch been? How have you been enjoying Xerath Mortis? At least that open world content.
It is honestly a huge breath of fresh air that there is just like not an insane amount to do. Like there's stuff to do and there's a bunch of optional stuff to do. But it's like, I never once during 9.1 release was like, maybe I'll just log on and do things. Like,
yeah,
it was, I need to log on and get this done or get that done so that I don't fall behind. And that's really not the case. Like I haven't done my dailies yet today. I'm going to log on after this podcast and do my dailies.
Yeah.
That's it. Like it's going to take me 30 minutes at most. It's really nice. And I do find myself now going, you know, I've got some time. I don't have anything to do right now. Maybe I will log on and go work on one of these achievements that I'm going to need for flying in a few weeks, or work on one of these mounts, or get ciphers to fill out the cipher thing, or try and get one of the very broken, like world quest power things that does percent HP damage to everything around you and just kills everything in sight.
Yeah,
fun stuff.
No, yeah, I mean I would echo that, is that it's been nice just to like chill, or even like to be fair, I like doing things as soon as they come up. So like I've basically completed everything I can to get flying, but it was like I did it, like it wasn't like I do all these dailies and like unlock a bunch of stuff and like, oh my gosh, it's like 11:30 at night, I'm still doing the stupid zone and now I gotta like run around and click all these pages because I need to click 8 of them for, you know, part of the achievement. No, it's definitely been really cool. The thing that I'm actually most excited about, which I didn't do a ton of research going into the patch, was like the whole mount crafting system. I like the cosmetic side of things, right? And apparently, so just as a, this is one of our points and I'll sort of bring this up here, is that there's apparently like 41 mounts you can get from Xerath Mortis, which is massive amount. And like I saw a statistic, I think it was in Cataclysm, they didn't add 41 new mounts in the entire expansion. So like just in this one zone. So
like I'm sure there are recolors in there. There always are.
Yeah. But
like, Cataclysm mounts also had several recolors. Like there's mounts in Cataclysm that have 4 different colors. And that's 4 mounts. You know, 4 mounts. There's also some unique ones. And of course, there's going to be unique ones in this zone and this patch as well. So it's really like there's a lot of mounts, which also makes me kind of wonder, like, were these mounts supposed to be spread over 9.2 and 9.3? Again, like, was there supposed to be 9.3? And they just like, we have these assets. These are clearly Shadowlands mounts. We're going to dump them all in 9.2.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah, because there's some that aren't like that are not very like pro. What's the name of the new
whatever?
Progenitor based ones.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, yeah, maybe this was a part of some of the larger stuff. But no, it's been super cool just to sort of take my time, like look at that type of stuff. Killing rares again is fun because like I kill them if I'm near them, but if someone in raid chat or like general chat's like, there's a rare up all the way across the zone, I'm like, I don't care. Like, I don't need the rep.
Not worth.
Yeah, not worth like chasing it down like it would be in like Corthia, right? Because you get like extra, all that extra stuff. So,
all right, no. I have a question for you.
Sure.
What do you think of the jumping puzzles?
I love them, actually. So personally, I'm a huge fan of like just I like platformers in general, just as in types of games. And while jumping in WoW, not that fun. Like, it's a little frustrating, I'll say. And not too precise. It's nice that they like put this stuff in there. And the other cool thing about it is like it's not, again, with like this not being required, like in 4 or 5 weeks when you get flying, this becomes trivial, right? So like the people who do it today are doing it because they think it's fun. Like, that's for me, like it's interesting to try and like jump on those orbs and like get up to the top and like figure out a way to do it. And like in like 2 or 3 weeks, if you don't care about this, you get flying and you just land on top of everything you need, right? So
yeah. I mean, this is like basically echo exactly what you said. I like them. It reminds me a lot of some of the simpler jumping puzzles in the early zones of Guild Wars 2. You know, the few introductory zones where there's just a few jumping puzzles out in the world. There's some really big and like intricate ones out there in Guild Wars, including a couple in the starter zones that are more hidden. But there's also a lot of like ones that are honestly pretty similar to some of the jumping puzzles in this zone. And yeah, I like it. It's like, it's the kind of thing where nobody buys Guild Wars 2 jump just to do the jumping puzzles.
Yeah.
But since you already have it, it's a fun thing to do.
Oh yeah.
Nobody's buying WoW or subbing for 9.2 in order to do the jumping puzzles. But while you're here, it is a fun thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like it's fun. Like I normally do dailies with like one or two other people, so it's fun to like rag on other people for failing. Particularly just as like gentle ribbing. The jumping puzzles are definitely like a cool thing. And just all like the treasures in general are just, you know, are cool. Just to sort of the flavor of the zone. So no, it's been definitely a blast going through it all. The dailies being 30 minutes is great because like jump in, jump out. I actually did dailies right before the podcast. So it was, I had enough time between that to jump in and get it done. So, and the research is interesting too, because like, while I did the thing of reading the WoWhead article that they wrote about like what research to do first, like really only used it to make sure I wasn't missing out on any like rep stuff. So like I got the extra daily research.
Yeah, there's one research that you need to do in order to get an extra daily, which some days will maybe give extra rep. And if you miss it, it's actually fine because you're still going to hit revered on time.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah. So this is, it's been a very cool zone. I guess some of the other, maybe we sort of jump around a little bit, but a couple of the other things that they put out, one is a really huge quality of life thing, which is your Hearthstone. So if you set your Hearthstone to your Covenant Sanctum and then you swap Covenants, previously it reset your Hearthstone to Ouroboros, which I 100% the first day of the patch did something, like had swapped from Venthyr to Necro and went to Hearth back to like just being like, I need to go to my Sanctum to send off some missions and literally move like 30 feet away. Just now I'm in the Ring of Fate again or whatever. I was like, this sucks. But they've patched it now where like, you know, if you have your Hearthstone set to your Covenant Sanctum, it'll just transition if you swap Covenants, which is like really just an fun, like
now,
such a weird thing to bring up, but it's cool.
This is not what I saw a bunch of people in my guild confusing it for, which they thought it was the Covenant Hearthstones becoming a teleport to the Sanctum. That's not that. You do not, like, you can't use the Night Fae Hearthstone as, like, a teleport to the Night Fae Sanctum when you've got your Hearthstone set to the new zone or anything like that.
Exactly.
It's just if, like, you have your Covenant, you have your Hearthstone set to the, you know, Night Fae Covenant Sanctum, and then you switch to Venthyr. Now your Hearthstone is in Sinfall, in Revendreth. So, which is, like you said, really big quality of life, because I definitely would pretty consistently, like, I would swap from Kyrian to Necrolord.
Yeah.
And my Hearthstone would get moved from, you know, I don't, the Kyrian Sanctum to Ouroboros. And I would go and be like, okay, I need to go switch conduits really quickly. And it's like, oh, fuck, I'm in Ouroboros now. I have to take this flight path over to the zone and then walk through my order hall to get to the the thing. And instead of it being like a 30 second summon me back kind of deal, I'm going to be gone for 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That flight path sucks. Yeah. But no, this is a great sort of little quality of life thing that they've put in the patch, which is nice. So I guess the other thing too that they clarified, just so we're on the same page, is that they clarified drops for week one. So you like your vaults. They did a couple of things with vault stuff, but one of the things they clarified for next or after heroic week, the vault right after heroic week, so the vault that kicks off mythic week, it won't contain either tier shoulders or tier chest, regardless. So those two tier pieces will be locked behind, you know, actually killing the boss and then getting the first sort of vault opening the week after mythic open. So that's a good. I mean, I think I probably was like on the fence of being like, this is how it probably should work. But yeah.
So when I did my tier completion sims, I assumed it was going to drop the shoulders and whatever helm, whatever it is, yeah. Shoulders and chest from the get go, and that you could get lucky and get the full four piece the first week by getting the shoulders or chest from your vault and the other three pieces from raid. It's good that's not going to be how it works.
Yeah.
It really means that there's not going to be this like select few extremely lucky people that just for your, like for working on the final three bosses in heroic or whatever are going to come in with a four piece and everybody else in your raid is going to be like, I got my two piece or maybe not even that.
Yeah.
It also does not have a significant impact on like overall completion times for your tier sets. So like, if you're looking at this and going, oh no, it's going to take longer for our raid to finish their four pieces. Not really. It really just means that you can't get super, super, super lucky and have it, you know, on March 8th when you open your vault. You can still get it March 8th when you get through heroic.
Yeah.
When you have to actually get through heroic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, this is something we expected, but it was nice that they clarified. There was another clarification too, is that like I think tier sets can't come from like your Mythic Zero, like at the end of Mythic Zero chests. Like so if you did the the weekly
the Emissary of War?
The Emissary of War stuff. So like
Ooh.
Yeah, they did. Well, so they clarified it through limit. So limit, like Max and THD were tweeting about it. So they clarified that way. So like any like the weekly events, if it's like the weekly events Mythic Plus, you can't get tier sets from those caches by doing four Mythic Zeros. You also can't get it if it's the, I think it's like the raid or the PvP one. So they just won't get tier sets from those quests, basically.
Yeah. They are on a separate kind of on a separate drop table in raid. So that does make sense. Yeah. It's still probably worth doing that early in the patch just for the chance of getting, you know, if you're a priest, you could get the priest ring, DKs could get their whatever the special item that DKs get this tier. Other special weapons or trinkets from the raid that you could pull from that. The first box is only normal eye level. Later on, it'll go up to heroic for Emissary of War, but not until later in the patch.
Right.
So it's not going to be like, if you're a mythic raider, it's not going to be an eye level upgrade. But you could get one of the good items that's like really good regardless of item level.
Exactly. Which will be nice. So could get a Genesis lathe. Would be great.
And then never equip it
regardless of its item level. The other thing too around the vault is Blizzard did make changes to the raid vault. So basically every level of the raid vault was reduced by one. So now instead of having to kill three bosses, you have to kill two. Then having to kill six, you have to kill five for your second one. And then instead of having to kill nine, you have to kill eight for all three, which is basically makes it so you can get a full vault week one, right? If as long as you clear heroic or normal, whatever it ends up being, all eight bosses.
This honestly would have been huge, both this like in Sanctum and in Nathria, because it actually gives people that are pugging the ability to skip certain bosses that are just extremely difficult to pug. You know, in Sanctum, just being able to go, okay, we're going to get eight bosses. We are not doing Fate Scribe. We are not doing Sylvanas.
Yeah.
And just getting the other eight bosses like that are significantly easier to pug. Like Painsmith can be kind of bad, but the damage check is so low on heroic that really everybody can just focus on dodging spikes and you'll kill the boss eventually.
Exactly.
So that would have been really, really nice for pugging. It also dramatically simplifies the like Great Vault Jenga that you play.
Oh, I hate it, dude. I hate it.
During farm, because yeah. getting, you know, 20 something people, 9 vault slots, there's a point at which you can't, and you have to like say, we're going to like get these people 9 slots this week or 9 vaults this week and these people 9 vaults next week.
Yeah.
It's like having it be 8 is just like infinitely nicer for that.
Oh yeah. It even helps too with like the 2 boss raids for just the one chest or 2 boss kills for yeah. one chest. Cause then you can do like alts to kill yeah. the first opening boss. Right. And then assuming you have to kill at least three bosses total or 2 bosses, sorry, to get to the last boss. And with the skip, right, you then get like in Sanctum, it was like for KT and Sylvanas, you can bring the real comp, but for Terragru, you can bring whoever you want.
Whatever. Right? Yeah. That's a great point. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
This also means that, for example, the first week of Mythic, if you're not like a, you know, huge progression guild, if there's a couple of early bosses that are really easy on Mythic, you know, a Vigilant Guardian and I don't know if Skrullex is like undertuned and kind of a pushover, then you can walk in, kill those two, go back to Heroic.
Exactly.
And get you'll have a Mythic vault at that point.
Yeah.
Or at least some people will. It actually makes it easier. Like if you're a little bit bigger of a progression guild and you kill 3, you can basically get your whole raid
at least one
mythic slot. Which would be really nice.
Yeah. Just more gear in there for sure.
Yeah. This also comes with this is not just a change to the raid vault. Like the raid vault change is nice. Yep. There's also a change to the final vault slot for the Mythic Plus and PvP rows. So the Mythic Plus vault is going to, I believe, 8 dungeons completed from 10. This just, you know, cuts off a solid hour to an hour and a half of time required to complete your Mythic Plus vault. Like if you look at a dungeon is taking anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour plus the like 15, 20 minutes between keys that you need if you've got a group going and they're just spamming them. This does cut off like 20% of the time you're taking. This cuts off a solid couple of hours. Okay. And then the third PvP vault down to 5,500 honor from rated PvP, where it previously was 6,250. I think this is about the same, about a 20% reduction in the amount of time that you have to spend in getting your third PvP vault, which makes these like before the jump from, you know, 1 dungeon to 4 dungeons was pretty big, and the jump from 4 dungeons to 10 dungeons was just like,
it was so long. It was just like,
it was so hard to justify doing 3 unless you were already doing something like completing all 10 dungeons in order to get your Mythic Plus score up so you could upgrade things with Valor.
Yeah. I think to be fair, I've only ever done the full 3 Mythic Plus like 2 or 3 times, and it's been those weeks where I've been like, I just want to get my, like, I want to get KSM. And so like, this is my KSM push week, and like, then I'll get 10 in those weeks. But yeah, it's definitely a nice little quality of life change to drop it slightly down. I'm more excited about the raid one. Cause like you said, it makes the Jenga of like, we have 5 people that need 1 more kill. This means we have to go kill like Painsmith or like Bates Scribe. And just like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
So it's even worse where it's like, we have to kill the 9 because we have a couple people that need 1 more boss kill for, you know, like 6 or whatever. And you're just like, I'm going to spend 10 minutes on the 9, fall asleep halfway through.
Speaking of raid vaults.
Yes.
We're, like I mentioned before the podcast, we're going back in to do Sylvanas tonight for mounts, which means we're killing, of course, 3 bosses, the Terragru, KT, and Sylvanas. And this is my final shot to get a Cruciform Vein Ripper from Mythic.
That's true. I'm going to get
one Mythic slot on Tuesday. And
I think you can do it.
This is the last chance. This is the last chance. We have an enhancement. Like we have a my co-tank. This is a Demon Hunter. He got them 2 weeks in a row. Our enhancement shaman now has 2 Mythic Vein Rippers. He also got them like 1 in a vault and then 1 in raid. Meanwhile, I'm over here looking at it going like, I'm probably never replacing those. And I have 4 ones.
Oh, God. That's hilarious. I hope you got it. So all the luck for you.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
That's true. A couple, I guess, that's really sort of it in terms of like some of the week one stuff. They did push, I guess, shifting gears, still more 9.2 stuff, but more around like the hot fixes. So they pushed a bunch of hot fixes across various different things. So I'm just going to cherry pick the things that I think are the coolest. And then Emerson, if you want to pull out, what do you have? So one of the interesting things they pushed, which sort of flew under the radar, is that renown level 79 and 80 can now be earned from any source of renowned and not from the covenant campaign quests. So that's good. If you like just want to farm up renown in Torghast or something, you can basically cap it off without having to go through your full covenant campaign.
I mean, it is really easy to do the anima one, but it's also time gated. Like if you don't want to go and collect 20 souls or if worse, you use your anima one and your souls one to get, you know, 278, you don't have to wait an extra week to get to 80.
Exactly.
Not that those last two renown levels do much, but it is nice to be able to say I'm done. I'm done. I finished it. Speaking of renown, if you already capped your renown, you may not have noticed this, but the covenant or the 9.2 like story campaign gives a huge amount of renown. I had not capped my Necrolord renown on my monk yet. I had just done enough to like get Emeni and Merileth, like all of their rows unlocked. And I went from, you know, 60 something to almost cap just from doing the story campaign. So it not only gives a rep, which you don't need on alts, but it also gives renown. So if you have alts that need renown on a covenant, then it's actually a really great way to do it. It's super, super time efficient. If you're just looking for renown, since you've already done the story campaign, if it's an alt, you can just go through it, like put on something on Netflix and just go through the covenant, the story campaign real quick and get your renown up by like 15, 20 levels.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it. I did that on my monk because funnily enough, Necrolord was not capped for me. So, and that's what I think we're going to be playing, or I'll be playing at least. Something like 13 or 14 free levels of renowned. Which is awesome. So yeah, I definitely missed out on one or two at the start and then noticed like someone said something in guild. It was like, oh, these give renown. I'm like, oh God, no. So I wasted like one or two, but it was a nice increase.
I luckily logged on late enough in the day that people were already talking about it. Like, hey, this gives a lot of renown. If you have a covenant that you haven't capped out and you don't like need your current covenant to like kill things, then just swap covenants and get it done.
Yeah, exactly. So no, that's definitely nice. Another change that they put in was they're changing the zone quest in Xerath Mortis. So it was called Patterns Within Patterns. Basically, it was like the previous like Korthia zone quest where it was bi-weekly. So they reset every reset day plus Friday. And you basically just did stuff in the zone and it would fill a bar. And at the end of the bar, you got like material. So it was like you got rep and flux and some ciphers too. So what they've done is they've changed that from a 3-day timer to now a weekly timer. So you'll now be able, you'll have to do it, you know, once a week, which is it's an interesting change because I would have rather it kept them bi-weekly, right? Just because
it's actually not bi-weekly. It's every 3 days.
Oh, every 3 days.
I don't know why they did that. Because it makes it much more.
I thought it was
because the weeks are 7 days long. It means that there's not a consistent reset time for the quest. Like this week, it actually like the timer started on Monday, so the first one ended on Wednesday. The second one ended on Saturday, and then the third one will end on Tuesday. So you realistically have until tomorrow to finish the third one, and it starts today. It's very strange. It's very, very strange. And so I wouldn't have minded it being bi-weekly either, but definitely, honestly, weekly is just the way to go. Weekly, like the bi-weekly is fine. The weekly model is just, it's another in these like list of things that they can do to reduce the stress about like trying to keep up. Because If you were really busy with work like Tuesday, Wednesday, you just missed one of the patterns within patterns.
Yeah.
And that sucks. But now, you know, like you said, doing world quests will get you 100% completion if you just do your world quest every day and you can then go and turn it in, you don't have to do anything extra. But if you miss some world quests one day, you can go and do rares, chests, things that you might actually already do while you're doing world quests and make up for it. And so the weekly lets you do that. Bi-weekly lets you do that to some degree. But the 3 days thing is just like really weird.
Yeah. Sorry. And I guess I read it wrong because I thought it was the old bi-weekly thing. All right. I'm an idiot.
Everybody
then.
Did. Yeah. Like, that's what I thought it was too until like I was like, huh, that reset time is weird. And I asked around and I heard from somebody that, yeah, they changed it. It's every 3 days.
Oh, weird. All right. Well, now we don't have to worry about it because it's weekly. It'll start to be weekly this Tuesday.
Which does mean that you need to finish your. There's a 3 day one that starts today. Technically, that would normally end, you know, Tuesday. So you could do it after reset. But you're not going to be able to do that because it's changing. The old quest is going to go away.
Yeah.
So you need to finish the one that you get today before reset, which is not a big deal. Like, if you do dailies today, dailies tomorrow, you can turn it in tomorrow night. You might need like a couple of rares or something to close it out, but you can do them while you're doing world quests. It's not a big deal.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that was sort of the I guess a larger change to like that sort of, I don't know, what would you call it? Like overall or progress quest in Zerath Mortis. So it'll now be weekly. And then the final thing I want to do is actually touch on some of the items and rewards hotfixes they did. So I don't know if you had any other fun things or you just want to jump right into.
Let's jump into that because there's some fun ones.
Yeah. So I guess we'll just take the from the top down. So the first one is they've changed Divine Bell. Basically now it'll always provide its mastery increase over 15 seconds instead of 9. So I think what this did is this this just normalizes the duration where like certain versions of the new bell, I think were shorter and older versions were longer. So now everything's just a 15 second buff, the mastery buff from Bell now.
Yeah.
So that's there. Which is, I guess, okay. I didn't use Bell, but
ones for Boomkins and apparently like Disc Priests use it because you can line it up with your Boon Ramp.
That's right.
Just get huge because their mastery for Disc Priest is like Atonement Healing or something.
Yeah.
And it's like really huge to get all of the mastery in your ramp. Same thing with Boomkins getting the mastery during their Rav or during, if you're playing Night Fae, Convoke the Spirits.
During Convoke, yeah. Yeah, so that's sort of a good change. Well, good change just to sort of normalize it. Next up is they are reducing, they're hitting Soulletting Ruby, basically reducing the critical strike it grants by 15%. For Ruby, it's just a huge amount of crit and was probably one of the most sought after dungeon trinkets across multiple different classes. Like it was very good for Mistweaver, you know, using it with a Venthyr, right, where crit is highly valued. I think Warlocks use this too, as crit was very highly valued for them. There's probably other classes that I'm forgetting, but
so this is an intellect trinket,
right?
Unironically, this was a good trinket for Brewmaster
because of all the crit.
That's how much crit it gave. It was a good trinket for Brewmaster.
That's
crazy. It wasn't better. Like if you had an actual agility trinket, there's numerous agility trinkets that are better than it for Brewmaster because they also give agility plus some other effect. But it gives so much crit that it was worth using over a number of just bad agility trinkets because of how much crit it gave. So like, that's not to say like you should be taking this from your casters because you definitely shouldn't. But if you had really bad agility trinkets, it was worth using. It was,
that's nuts.
So I think the developer note on this is interesting. So they nerfed 3 trinkets overall over this week and last week, File of Putrefaction, Soulletting Ruby, and Blood Spattered Scale. And they comment that these were part of a trifecta of dungeon trinkets that were over budgeted enough that each new tier of item level scaling ensured they'd be among the best, if not the best trinket for classes that use them without question. And that's 100% true. And I don't think that these 15% nerfs actually change that. It does make them a little bit less extreme, where like Soulletting Ruby getting a 15% nerf now puts it less in the stratosphere compared to other trinkets.
Oh, yeah.
But it's still like being able to get a huge amount of stats on an unuse for one of the, especially one of the classes that has all of their damage concentrated in a very short time frame, like your Daemalocs, your Boomkins, it's still gonna be insane.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the Ruby nerf. For Mistweaver specifically, it actually, with other factors, becomes less of a desirable trinket. It's still very good. It's still like sort of an A or S tier type trinket, but it's not as sought after. Yeah.
I didn't read the whole developer note, but that is their goal. They were like, we don't want to make it unviable. We just want to make it like not so much the best that getting any other trinket is like bad.
Exactly. Exactly.
And there are two tank trinket buffs, and I mean, spoiler, they're still bad. So I want to talk about these a little bit because they're both very weird trinkets, and like the way they're constructed is highly unusual, even if the things they do are pretty normal. So there's Blade Dancer's armor kit. Its armor and damage done was increased by 25%. Now, Blade Dancer's armor kit is still bad, and part of the reason it's bad is because it's this very awkward, like 2 or 3 minute duration on a 5 minute cooldown, which is just like really weird. Like it's the gap where you don't have it is longer than the cooldown on a lot of trinkets.
Yeah.
There's also the fact that just like getting bonus armor in the current like way that specs are designed and tuned is actually just not very good. Like getting a small amount of armor over a long period of time, in theory, like you can look at that and go like, oh yeah, it mitigates the same amount of damage as like Blood Spattered Scale. It doesn't matter. Like you use Blood Spattered Scale as a cooldown, not as like a passive damage gain. Whereas Blade Dancer's armor kit is like a passive like damage reduction of like 2, maybe 3% for the duration that it's up. And that's just not worth a trinket slot. They would need to buff it to the point that it's, you know, 8 or 10% damage reduction for that period for it to be compelling. And it's at that point, it's just over budget.
Yeah, it's way too long.
It's just something where, like, the way the duration works out, there's just not a point that they can point at that it will be good without it being overwhelmingly powerful.
Right. This is a similar idea with like a trinket like this, where like they can't make it too powerful because of the duration. However, most uses of a trinket you don't need it for 2 minutes. Like you need it for a 15 second area that's dangerous, and it's not powerful enough to cover that 15 second area. So you just don't typically use it. Right.
Yeah. The other thing is the damage on it is a damage reflect. So like when you get hit, it does damage as a thorns effect.
Yeah.
Which is really awkward because of how much tanks and keys have to care about threat. Threat is just like a huge, huge, huge question mark. And something like Blood Spattered Scale giving you both a very strong defensive on pull and a nice burst of damage on pull is great for threat and great for surviving the initial on pull while you're getting all your defensives like up. If you're something like a Death Knight where you need to refresh your bone shield stacks and need to get runic power to Death Strike, Blood Spattered Scale is just like infinitely better than this. And there's no way it can compare.
Yeah.
The second trinket is one of the only trinkets that they've released in a very long time that is actively worse than having an empty trinket slot. and that is because, so Pulsating Stoneheart previously was armor, health regen, and a self slow for 12 seconds. You could not remove the slow with anything. Freedom didn't work. You could bubble and you would still be slowed. Tiger's Lust doesn't remove it if you're a monk. So and it's another one where like the armor and the health regen are actually just really low. They buffed it by 35% and they're still very low. It needs to be for a downside that's so impactful. Like I think 8.3, like Corruption, showed people just how impactful being slowed is, especially as a tank. Having that Corruption slow come up at a bad time just killed you. And like you can control this, but this trinket, if you like use it, is just a net negative almost every time. You're worse for having pushed the button than having done nothing at all. So it's like there are a few niche scenarios, like on a boss, you can push this and it's usually not net negative if you push it when you're not going to have to walk out of anything or move anything. But it is like with such a strong negative on the trinket, it has to be way more powerful on the positive than it currently is.
Right. Yeah. That makes Interesting. Yeah. Those self, like any sort of negative type trinket is always tough. Particularly, I guess, with tanks, being slowed is just being slowed in general in the game sucks. Like, not even if you're a tank, just being slow in general is always, always an issue. So,
like, imagine using this when you're, and then like going like, oh, I need to kite now, and you can't because you're slowed and you can't remove the slow. So now you're just going to die because you use the trinket. Yeah. It's bad. Don't use it. Like, put it on for the agility and or stamina that it gives you, and then just never push the button. That's the only way I would recommend using Pulsating Stoneheart.
That's hilarious. Cool. And then I guess the final trinket that they've at least released nerfs for, or actually not the final, there's one other one. But the next trinket is First Class Healing Disruptor, basically is getting its scaling adjusted. So we knew about this a couple weeks ago, but basically right now it's just the haste value is just scaling out of control to the point where like this becomes the new soul-letting ruby for healers, at least, where it's just far and away the best trinket you can equip. So they're basically pulling the scaling down. We don't know exactly where it ends just because they haven't released the live numbers yet or on PTR or on live. But they're going to adjust the haste down, hopefully just bring it more in line. It still hopefully still ends up being a strong trinket for everybody. Because Tazavesh is a fun dungeon to do. We'll see. This one is another one that was hit that we sort of figured it would just because of how strong it was going into or on PTR currently. And there was two other things that they mentioned that are two other data mined updates that came out. Basically, one was to a dagger off Rigolon, which is basically was one of the was a trinket that you'd stack up buffs on it, and then once you hit a certain amount, the bonus would double and it would last for like 20 seconds or 20 additional seconds, right? After that fact, then you'd have to wait 40 seconds until you could gain stacks again. So another one of those like rogue, or sorry, this was not a rogue, but this is I always think rogues for stuff like this because their legendary daggers function like this. But it's one of those ideas where like you stack up, you get like minor increases in stats, and then when you hit a certain amount, it doubles and you get like a huge burst, and then you sort of stacks go away for a little bit and they come back. So that's sort of dagger upgrades. And then there was the caster trinket, basically had its damage, I think, increased by 600 or 700%. The Grim Eclipse, also from Rigolon. So this was more of a offensive trinket, although to be fair, as a healer, I think it is on the Mistweaver loot table, if I remember correctly.
It gives haste. And that's like any of these trinkets that give stats, they will usually put on the tank or healer loot table. They've actually gotten better about putting even damage trinkets on the tank loot tables, because a lot of the times we'll use, you know, one defensive trinket, one offensive trinket or something like that. Healers, you typically will use two trinkets that give some kind of stats unless you're going for damage numbers.
So damage increase there. The haste value, though, remains the same. So from like a Mistweaver perspective, you know, as we look at this trinket, doesn't change its overall power for us just because the damage isn't the reason you'd equip this. So.
Yeah, it is a nice buff to the damage, though, especially since they didn't touch the haste.
Definitely pushes it more to like,
It's not a huge amount of haste. I don't know where this trinket stood prior to this change, but I'm assuming it wasn't good.
No. Not for Mistweavers, at least. Like, it was probably middle tier, if anything, middle low tier. So in terms of like the other options you had. So, yeah.
Not too
good at all, but now there seems like we'll continue to get the other thing too about these hotfix. So everything we just talked about, like item hotfix wise, was definitely a like 6 p.m 7 p.m Eastern hotfix release. So they're burning the midnight oil over Blizzard, like end of the day. That's like four or five o'clock Pacific time. They're pushing these updates out, getting this stuff out there. So they're definitely burning the midnight oil in terms of patches or in terms of hotfixes. It's also in line with a bunch of the hotfixes we talked about last week. They were also Friday evening pushes. Yeah. So I've talked to some of the other folks, maybe starting up a little bit of a happy hour on Friday evenings, waiting for the hot fixes to get pushed out. Start some drinks, go over the fun new news, what's getting nerfed, what's getting buffed. So
yeah,
but a little bit of a trend there. But no, it sounds like they're continuing to balance going into the patch, which we'd expect. So so cool. That's, I think, in terms of patch stuff, the final topic, of course, is something I want to cover near and dear to my heart on Mistweavers. But I don't know, Emerson, before we jump in, was there anything else you wanted to cover hotfix-wise? Or
coincidentally, also a Venthyr hotfix, but not for monks. Okay. But we'll get to that. I think we can get to that after we talk about Mistweavers.
Yep, cool. So, yes, Mistweaver time. So our dearly beloved Venthyr Covenant, right? The one that we played all of 915. Just a huge HPS gain for literally zero brain power. You hit the button every minute, did a bunch of healing. It was amazing. You didn't need raid frames to do 20, 30,000 HPS. It was great. They've made a couple of changes, right? So we had, of course, the Sinister Teachings update coming into the patch, which reduced the cooldown reduction from 5 seconds each crit to 2.5 seconds each crit, effectively halving the cooldown reduction. Turns Fallen Order from a 1 minute to a 2 minute cooldown, effectively. That's a sizable nerf, but it still meant Venthyr was probably your top Covenant still, even with that nerf, which is wild to see how powerful that was. But looking at logs coming out of the raids this week on Tuesday and Wednesday, folks were noticing something very interesting, which was that the adepts that are spawned from the portal were only casting one Enveloping Mist across the board. And so if we remember back to some patch notes, way back in 9.1, Blizzard talked about, you know, haste no longer affecting the casts of your adepts, which, to be fair, no one actually believes that other than Blizzard themselves, because we have zero evidence that actually occurred. And then in 9.15, them making a post about saying, oh, well, now all your adepts are going to cast two Enveloping Mists consistently. Again, no one actually believed that because it never went in. We basically average it out. It's about 1.4, 1.5 Envelopings per time, like per adept, right? So sometimes they cast one, sometimes they cast two. About every 50% of the time, you got one or the other. So now in 9.2, another undocumented change is that they're only casting one. And that affects every adept, even the powerful adept you get from equipping Sinister Teachings. So this equates to about a 22% nerf in the relative power of Fallen Order.
Wait, just to Fallen Order or to Venthyr Mistweaver as a whole?
Just the healing coming from your Fallen Order monks. Be fair, is still a sizable decrease considering they were, you know, roughly half your healing.
It's not a 22% nerf to Venthyr Mistweaver. It's more like a 8 to 10% nerf to Venthyr Mistweaver.
Yeah, exactly. So it's fairly sizable. And what it actually does is it changes a lot of things with the way the class works, right? At this point, you know, to be fair, Sinister Teachings with this sort of change to Fallen Order means Sinister Teachings really isn't always equipped legendary. It now becomes your number two legendary or number three legendary in actually a lot of cases, which is interesting, meaning you'll probably play Ancient Teachings for the majority of progression until you unlock your second legendary, at least in raids. I think Mythic Plus, you'll probably still run Sinister Teachings just because having it up more often in Mythic Plus makes certain pulls easier. However, in raids, not really, less than useful, or less useful, I'm sorry. It also means that like the conversation between which Covenant you pick is now back to the way that we viewed 9.1, which is, and even 9.0 to a lesser extent, any Covenant's effectively viable, right? They're all fairly close. They're all fairly balanced. You know, you're talking about at most maybe a 10% decrease or 10% difference. So
what you're telling me is that in the most roundabout way possible, the Mistweaver tuning, like the guy or girl doing the Mistweaver tuning, has nailed it in the most impossibly convoluted way possible.
And the interesting thing too now, and thinking about this, I had a whole thing I was going to be complaining about undocumented changing as how these sucked. And it does suck when things change like this, because we didn't test this. Like, this has probably been a part of PTR for like weeks, but like you never test things like this because you just think they work the same way because they haven't made any changes around this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Other than the legendary, with changing the legendary should have no effect on the actual spell. But in any event, what it actually does, sorry, the real point I was trying to make is that it the choice you make between covenants now is actually dependent on the fight. Meaning, like, for a fight where you can stay relatively grouped up as a raid and you can make very good use of Bone Dust Brew, Necrolord becomes your best covenant, right, on that specific fight. Now, if we change that and we say where there's a fight where you're mostly spread out, you know, where a lot of the damaging is going to occur when you have to spread and you can't be grouped, well, then, to be fair, Venthyr becomes fairly powerful, right? And then you have other ideas where if it's a very short fight and mana is not a concern, Night Fae is good. Because while Night Fae is probably the lowest in terms of HPS, they can push a bunch of it if mana is not a concern, which means shorter fights where teams are grouped, you know, potentially Night Fae becomes really good. They also have very good covenants, Soulbinds. So the choice is not only just, hey, play what you want. They can also min-max it to say, play what the fight requires. I mean, I think I talked about this probably weeks ago. We talked about 9.0 and 9.1 and having a similar idea of, like, you know, Kyrian or Necrolord, you can make the case of either one. They've gotten to it again, which is, hey, good on Blizzard for doing it. Sort of pissed they didn't say this, like, they didn't say anything about this, right?
I wonder if it's even intentional, or it's just like they do this pretty often where they will have something fixed in the hotfix, and then the fix won't get applied to the new patch.
Yeah.
And so then the patch comes out, it regresses some of the fixes from hot fixes, and they have to go in again. And I'm wondering if it's just that, or if it's actually a intentional change.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a toss up. I would say that it's not intentional, in terms of just like the fact that they made such a big deal about trying to fix it to 2 in 9.15, which they never really got to it. And they were already making the changes to Sinister Teachings to pull it in line. Like, this just seems like to your point, they pulled the wrong build that went live that didn't contain this hotfix. Or, like, as a part of the Sinister Teachings hotfix, somebody fat fingered another number and just now it happens just be 1, right? Because the interesting too is it affects, like, when you equip Sinister Teachings, one of your adepts becomes empowered, right? So in the case of Mistweaver, we get 1 healing monk that's empowered. And so even that monk is limited to just 1 enveloping, which seems unintentional.
Unintentional.
Yeah, yeah, I can see like having like 1, because number 1, it lasts so much longer, right? It lasts the full duration. Oh, I think it's the full duration, right? And so like it's already going to be out regardless, you know, of like the timing, right? So it should cast 2, potentially 3, right, envelopings. And so, yeah, it's just it's a weird change. But to be fair, it balances Mistweaver, which is like in terms of covenant choices. A lot of people are sort of like, oh, Mistweaver sucks. Like, we're not going to be brought anymore. But like, to be fair, we were already so far ahead. What?
Yeah. We still have one in our comp. Like, I'm still tentatively stuck on Brewmaster just in case the Mistweaver does not end up being the play for every boss like it would have been if we had one during 9.1 progression.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to be pigeonholed into always bringing Mistweaver, basically. Brewmaster's just a good tank, so it's a very reasonable alternative.
Exactly. Yeah.
But Mistweaver is still good. Like, we still have one. We have a healer that's planning to main with Mistweaver, and we're planning to put it in on comps. Like,
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, like, a bunch of other healers also got hit with some like nerfs to their throughput. So, this is not the death of Mistweaver. Like, Mistweaver was overpowered in 9.15. We'll say, like, particularly just in the way the power came to, is like you could turn your brain off and just dodge mechanics, never target anybody in a raid, and still do the most HPS of your team, right? Like, it was stupid easy to sort of do that. So now it's a little bit more, you have to think a little bit more, your choices matter a little bit more, which I think is cool. And yeah, it's funny. I was complaining in the vet channel for Mistweaver. I was like, this is awful. Like, why did Blizzard have to make it so that there's nuance and choices so that when people ask, you can't just be like, oh, just play X. It's like, well, now you have to explain. It's like, well, if the raid's going to be stacked up for the majority of the fight, you'll play Necrolord. But of course, if it's going to be spread out, particularly around large damage events, you'll play Venthyr. If it's going to be a super short fight, like less than 4 to 5 minutes, you can actually play Night Fae, even if you're grouped. But Necro might be stronger there just because of the way the damage comes out. And just like all this, like now there's like all this nuance around it, which everybody loves. everybody wants that, but no one actually wants, like, they want it in a way of like being like, I want to choose whatever I want. I want people to like affirm that I'm okay doing that. But the actual idea is most people just want to be told what to do in the course of their choices here. And it's just, that's the frustrating part. So
it's going to be really interesting on something like Skull X. If that ends up being a fight that is tuned pretty high, I could see you playing any of those three as Mistweaver. You could play Venthyr if you're primarily responsible for just pointing out HPS during the like main phase of the fight, where you have a lot of the raids stacked, but then the melee are away from you, and there's the three range that have to be farther away so that they can get their dust stacks. So you play Venthyr to do that kind of like spread just raw HPS. Or you play Necrolord if you are going to be doing a bunch of the healing to the raid in that window where you stack together and you get the burrow and you get that damage. You get all of that dust damage because you have a ton of stacks at the point that you're going to be triggering that. So there's just a bunch of healing to do. And if you're like, you could just stick Bone Dust Brew on there and like go nuts. Or if it ends up being a short fight, you could do neither and play Night Fae.
Yeah. Or and, Kyrian. I mean, Kyrian, of course, I didn't really touch on Kyrian, but like Kyrian's also a choice, right? In all of this, like playing like Chi Ji and just being very efficient with like your healing across the course of a fight, right? Particularly like a longer fight where mana becomes an issue and you've seen a lot of consistently good healing, like Kyrian becomes somewhat of a play there with Call to Arm, or sorry, with Weapons of Water and Chi Ji, like Invoke Chi Ji, which is what you play there. It does, like Kyrian, the only bad part about Kyrian as we sort of talk about this, which doesn't, I know we started this as a Venthyr nerf, but the only bad part about Kyrian is almost none of how you'd play Kyrian interacts very well with your four piece. Every other covenant works very well with four piece, which is of course increased healing whenever you use Thunder Focus T for about 10 seconds. So like every other covenant, their abilities work well with that four piece. Kyrian is like, you don't want to play Refreshing Jaywind because you want to play Invoke GG, and like you're not like doing a bunch of like spread healing. Well, I guess you are doing a little bit of spread healing, but yeah, it doesn't work as well from a kit, like the way you'd play Kyrian, but you could do it. Like it's still an option. Yeah. So, but yeah, the Venthyr nerf sucks. It sucks. I think I was going to write this big, I talked to the guy, like all the folks, and I was like, I'm going to write this post on Wildhead about how this is awful that they're changing it. But I started writing it Thursday night, and literally I wrote like probably about three quarters of it. And I was like, this is just me complaining that they made an undocumented change and didn't tell anybody. Like, that's all I'm doing here is like writing a, like, I want to complain about a change going in that no one knew about. And like, that doesn't seem like the right, I couldn't get my head around like why I'd write this piece other than just to say, hey, they made this change and be annoyed, which is like a waste of time. So
that's, that's fair. So I was going to talk about the nerf to Ravenous Frenzy that went in, but they actually fixed the bug that they introduced. So there was this thing, this cheese that people found, where you could cast a spell that auto shapeshifted you, like Roar. If you were in caster form or boomkin form and you pressed Roar, it would turn you into bear form. And you would get two stacks of Ravenous Frenzy, one for switching to bear form, which is like cast for free, and one for casting Stampeding Roar. So chaining those together would let you get a bunch of extra stacks by casting just all the things that automatically switch forms. And they fixed that, and they very briefly broke the ability to generate stacks with instance, basically. Oh, Jesus. You would like finish a cast and you'd cast an instant Star Surge and you would get one stack because of the way they fixed it. They added like onto it, and it was tuned wrong. But apparently they then fixed that. I just found out after I said that I was going to talk about this. So that got fixed. So it's very interesting. Like, so Mistweaver's back in the boat of just everything is viable. Brewmaster's not.
What do you got? You guys still just playing Kyrian? So just Kyrian boys?
Kyrian is just head and shoulders above everything else in raid. Yeah. Just head and shoulders. There is no way you ever play Night Fae or Venthyr. There are like some niche scenarios I could see people playing Necrolord, and like half of them involve somebody that's Necrolord wearing that stupid trinket that gives people of the same covenant more stats. And then there's also like, well, we've got a couple of of people that are very, very adamant in the Discord that Night Fae is going to somehow become the like key pushing high keys covenant. And I have no idea how, like, their entire argument is basically predicated on Nia the Soulbind being like really good, because it's gonna like, you're gonna get extra HP and the extra HP is gonna make it worth it. And it's like,
no,
like, you're gonna get your Feyline Harmony, you're going to then walk out of your Feyline and not benefit at all from your Feyline Harmony, and you're going to be sad.
Any sort of like, I feel like in Mythic Plus, any sort of like have to stay in a certain spot type abilities are just, they're so hit or miss, right? Particularly like if there's any sort of like mobs do a bunch of ground target stuff, or like where you have to play around like where you're actually positioned in a room. That's the biggest downfall of the monk four piece, right? Or the mystery of four piece, is that because it drops the rune on your feet, like you have to think about, okay, do I have to make a big move coming up here? Or am I gonna waste this? So like similar, like to Night Fae, that like the Fae line, it just sucks. They move it out kiting, of it. So
kiting is just such a big part of playing a tank in high keys that I like, it would have to reach the point that by playing Night Fae, you didn't have to kite in order for it to be the meta covenant for that, I think, because that's the only way you get to stand in your Fae line and use it.
Yeah.
Maybe it happens and I'm totally wrong, but like half the reason that Necrolord became like such a good covenant for high keys was because you could like, I mean, obviously Fleshcraft is good and that was part of it.
Yeah.
But the rest of it was like being able to wear Mighty Pour and just spam brews and drop sudden deliveries on things and just kite your ass off, because that's all doable from range, and you can throw Bone Dust Brew from range and you can keg smash from range, and you then have your sudden delivery to sustain threat from range, even when you can no longer, you know, spinning crane kick or blackout kick mobs in melee. So yeah, and then I mean, Venthyr is better than Night Fae and raid. It just is.
Yes. Venthyr boys. The Soulbind
didn't get nerfed for us.
Yeah, you guys still get the five. Both you and Windwalkers are still at 5 seconds reduction, which is really good. It's just a misweaver that, I mean, it was like the hilarious part about all this, right, is that, and somebody was bringing this up the other day, and I'm like, yeah, I realized it from like the monk, the misweaver community in general, like we don't test everything.
I mean, we don't either. There's just too many to test.
Yeah, so particularly this Venthyr thing, because the legendary is actually going below what it originally released at, which was 3 seconds. The original release of the legendary was 3 second reduction. Bumped it up to 5, became very good. And didn't really like, and to be fair, like we didn't know how good it was until people started playing it, just because number one, all through beta, I don't know if people realize this, all through beta, Fallen Order was broken. Like literally unusable up until the final week or two. Maybe not that close. Maybe like the final month. We'll give them the best.
It started off being broken in like a hilariously overpowered way.
Yeah.
And like there was a point where all of the like draft guides or brewmasters said, you're playing Venthyr because Fallen Order did so much damage. They fixed it. And it instantly went to the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. And then by the time like 9.1 came around and we were on the PTR doing like the testing there, like nobody had a Venthyr. And I think the other thing too is you actually had to level Venthyr up. Like,
yeah.
You basically couldn't do pre-mades of a certain covenant. So that was the other difficult part, was like, it was so quote unquote bad up until that point. So it would have been interesting to see if we would have put some time into like the 9.1 PTR, if we could have saw the strength of it. I don't know. It's an interesting thing I thought back around.
Well, just one thing that has been nice is we do have people in the Brewmaster like world that in 9.1.5 were doing just raids on every covenant. You know, we had people that literally did a mythic clear as every single covenant, and were like, yeah, Venthyr is like significantly better with the legendary and actually like pretty good, especially when you don't get a lot of invoke Niazhao damage, but then like you just give up Weapons of Order, and Weapons of Order is good. You give up Bone Dust Brew and Fleshcraft, and both of those are good this just fire and forget ability. And then again, we had people like doing PTR testing and raid on different covenants. So I feel like we actually had pretty good coverage on the Brewmaster end of things. not for 9.1, because I think it was a lot of the same issues. Like, you had to level up the Covenant in order to use it in the PTR testing.
Which is like, no. Imagine playing PTR to level a Covenant just to do some testing for an ability that's been... which is crazy.
Beta, we had people that did, and it just sucked.
I mean, luckily, I don't
think anybody did that for 9.1, but...
Yeah, in beta, we split it up, so we had a couple people do each one. But yeah, once 9.1 rolled around and like you had to use your live character, like it's just, no offense, I'm not spending like hours leveling Venthyr just to test an ability that's historically been bad. But no, I mean, we definitely missed it there, like as a community. But it's just interesting that they brought our legendary for us down below the original iteration, and we thought it was trash back then. So
yeah,
I mean, 9.2. It'll be fun to get in the raid this week and see. I mean, playing a new Covenant, like I'll be Necro, at least for progression. The start of Heroic, we'll see if that lasts into Mythic. But it'll be interesting to see, at least from a Mistweaver standpoint, what everybody plays. Because to be fair, I think almost all, like the biggest problem with Night Fae is just the mana cost of, like, I think Night Fae actually ends up being the highest theoretical HPS Covenant. The problem is it's also the
external mana.
You need a lot. Like, I think the biggest problem is you need a lot.
It's not even like, so with Dispriest, right? Yeah. You can get an Innervate and you dump all of your mana into your ramp during your Innervate. And that's where your HPS comes from. It's Night Fae's not like that. It's like consistent high mana expenditure because Feyline Stomp just costs a bunch of mana.
Yeah. And that's the underlying issue. It's not like Night Fae's not limited, not into burst windows, like you said. It's like just consistently a high mana spend. So short fights. I mean, there's a case for Night Fae being like particularly really good. It's just I don't foresee that being the case, and at least in the mythic fights I've looked at. So,
yeah. I mean, maybe on farm it becomes a parse thing. I could definitely see that.
That's true.
But it doesn't seem like a progression thing so far. And like similar thing actually. I could see. So, I will say the only time this expansion that the Brewmaster end of things has been like pretty off has been with what ended up being the meta build for Brewmasters and High Keys this patch. And it wasn't even that off. Like, we knew Necrolord was good, but the like Mighty Poor thing we completely missed. We missed that legendary entirely and missed the interaction that you would get with special delivery. Now you need like straight up need external threat in order to use that. You have to have it, or nobody can push their damage buttons until like 10-15 seconds into a pull, which is just not practical. You just can't wait that long. So you have to have a rogue or a hunter giving you external threat to really manage that, or people that are very, very coordinated and will like set up their burst for 15 seconds in for when you get your threat and you're good to start kiting. But then it became like the de facto build for all the people that are doing 25s, 26s, 27s. And, I mean, all the guides reflect that. All the guides that we have reflect that now.
But
it was not something that we saw coming. It's entirely possible that there's going to be something else. I have no idea what to expect from High Keys this season. I could actually see Kyrian becoming the de facto thing because of how frequently you can put out Invoke Niazhao damage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it really just boils down to, like, are you limited by damage or are you limited by your tank getting brutally murdered?
Getting absolutely crushed.
Yeah. And if it's the latter, then you probably still play Necrolord.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't see any scenario where Night Fae or Venthyr become like the meta one. But I could be wrong. I don't do that level of keys. Like, I just got my first Keystone Hero achievement this weekend on my Paladin, playing like just doing a necrotic wake for having a key for this coming week.
And
like, we had a 20, it was a necrotic wake, and we're like, it's kind of a shitty week, but it's necrotic wake, right? We can just use the weapons,
right?
Managed to almost fail the timer, but still did it, and I now have the necrotic wake teleport on my Paladin, not my monk.
Unbelievable. But
I don't do that level of keys. There's a few people in the community that do, and I don't think I've heard any of them be like, oh, Night Fae, Night Fae, Night Fae, except for there's like one streamer that is like Night Fae is going to be good. But they also had weird takes at the start of 9.1 as well that ended up being wrong. So we'll see.
See how that one goes. Nice.
Anyway, that's enough of me complaining about the randos in Peak Discord. Like, is it Night Fae is going to be the play at Mythic Plus in 9.2? Maybe they're right. Maybe they're wrong.
You gotta get Abbe under wraps there, man. He's got to stop pushing that propaganda, that Night Fae propaganda. So,
Abbe not respecting the mana.
Nope, not at all. Well, he just loves Night Fae. I mean, I think he's just into that sort of stuff.
I mean, the ability still does look really cool.
He's more into like the furry aspect of it. If we're being honest with ourselves,
it is a furry, of course.
Known fact.
Yeah, I wish. So I looked again at what the Night Fae Legendary does. Like, getting it off topic, we're running.
Yeah.
This is gonna be my last thing. But I looked again at the Night Fae Legendary, and I was struck again by just the fact that it doesn't make, like, it lets you push Feline Stomp more, but it doesn't make Feline Stomp really better. It gives Feline Stomp like this damage and healing amp that is like, I wish it would just like double the damage of Feline Stomp. Just double the damage of Feline Stomp. Like, obviously the 8% damage amp for us is nice because that translates to 8% more stomp damage, but that can't keep up with like the massive damage amp of Weapons of Order,
right?
Or on average it does keep up with the Bone Dust Brew damage amp, but like, you can totally high roll Bone Dust Brew damage and get an insane amount out of your Invoke Nizao, as well as like Marileth just giving you a 5% damage amp every time you press Bone Dust Brew. And so when you're a brewmaster pressing bonus brew every 30 seconds, you have then like 40 or 50% uptime on this 5% damage amp on top of the damage amp from bonus brew. It's really hard to look at this 8% damage amp and go, yeah, exciting.
Exactly. Yeah, no, Night Fae across the board is like, it's lackluster. It's to be fair, the only covenant is still at Renown level 1 for me. I've done 0 for that covenant. And that's the goal.
I'm going to go back and finish leveling it at some point. I started as Night Fae. I'm gonna finish leveling Night Fae at some point. But honestly, like, I would be very excited if they just, like, you know, partway through the patch, they just give us a hot fix. And it's like, you know, Feline Harmony doubles the damage of Feline Stomp now. Or gives it an extra 50% damage or something. Just make the button itself feel good to press on its own merit and not because it makes your stomp better.
Exactly.
Because right now it's like, when you're running Feline Harmony, you cast Feline Stomp so much, and every single time it feels bad. Anyway, do you have anything else you want to cover before we wrap things up?
No, I think we're good. I think we're just sort of, we'll get into the patch. We'll talk, I think for next week, we'll talk a little bit how our experience in the raid goes, and then we'll see. Hopefully, I mean, the other thing, the final topic I said is like, hopefully we're now getting into, now that the patch is here, getting into some like 10.0 announcement type stuff, right? It's right around when BlizzCon would have been hitting. Maybe we start to see some upcoming stuff, which would be cool.
I don't think we will see that until at least after the world first race, but I wouldn't be shocked to see, like, I mean, we're going to get the cutscene, right, from killing the jailer. There's going to be a cutscene. That cutscene is encrypted right now, so nobody's seen it yet that's outside of Blizzard.
Exactly.
We're going to get that. That's probably going to point to what 10.0 is going to be.
Yeah.
And then we'll actually start getting expansion announcements in, like, you know, late March, early April, maybe, fingers crossed, because we know we're not getting a 9.3.
Yeah.
We're not getting a 9.3. When did we start getting 9.2 announcements?
It was the fall time frame, right?
We had so the patch 9.1 came out at the end of June, like literally the last weekend or the last week of June it came out, and the raid released beginning of July.
Yeah.
And then I feel like we were getting 9.2 announcements in like September.
Yeah. So like a couple months after, which, I mean, I feel like for an expansion like this, they probably do a little bit earlier. Cause like right now, if they want to get the expansion out within the next year, like they have to get at least alpha up like by April or May.
Oh, extra bit. All right. Last thing. So some of you that have been watching the podcast for a while or listening to the podcast for a while will remember me complaining incessantly about not getting beta for Shadowlands.
Yeah.
So I had to rely on everybody else testing stuff for me. I couldn't like log on and level a character and level the Covenant and everything. I just couldn't do it. I didn't have beta.
Yeah.
Very good chance that I get beta this time around, or at least beta, maybe alpha.
Nice. I love it.
I'm hopeful. Like, it's not guaranteed, of course, but I'm very hopeful that I'll actually get beta this time.
Cause you got your name on a list. You got your name on a list. Finally.
I have my name on a list somewhere. Fingers crossed. I get beta.
That's awesome.
Cause otherwise, like, it turns out that doing any like theory work when you literally can't log on and test things
sucks.
It's really hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Have to rely on other people. You have to be like, hey, can you go and like do this thing and like upload a log for me so I can like go through it?
See what's happening? No, that's hilarious. Yeah. Oh, it's tough. It's hard.
It sucked.
We'll have a celebratory episode if that happens, by the way.
When I get my beta invite, we'll do a celebratory Emilson got beta. That's our podcast title for that week.
An hour and a half of just talking about you getting beta, how awesome it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be great. But yeah, that is it for our show today. Going slightly long, as is our other tradition. We're either slightly late or slightly long.
It happens.
But I'm going to wrap up this podcast and go do dailies. I don't know what you have on the docket for this afternoon, but that has been our show for today. Thank you all for listening and or watching. The people that are hanging out in chat, hi. And bye. Because that's it. Have a good weekend. Have a good raid this coming week. And if you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and the other work that we do, like all of the guide updates that we've been doing over the past couple of weeks on Peak of Serenity, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. And of course, come join the Discord. Patron or not, it's a great place to be. We have resources, links to guides, good discussion. If you want to keep up with the latest on like what trinkets are good, what the any changes to covenants or tier pieces or anything like that, that's going to happen in the Discord first. So if you want to keep up with that, Discord is the place to be. But that's it for the show today. Have a good weekend, and we will see you next week.
Bye.